Constitutional recognition for Australia's Indigenous peoples, it's suddenly very high on the national to-do list, thanks to the Prime Minister's encouragement, among other things. Recognition, reconciliation, buzzword ideas, they're words that capture the mood of the times in relations between white and Indigenous Australia. But dig a little deeper than the surface of this sort of feel-good emotion of unspecified respect, of vague remorse. What is it exactly, from the point of view of European Australia, that we might be recognising? What are we asking black and white Australia to reconcile? How deep do we need to dig to heal some of the sense of grievance that still divides original Australians and the colonisers and the generations who followed from 1788? Historian Henry Reynolds has a particular view on this. He's the author of numerous books and a man who, more than many, has revealed the many grim truths about white occupation of this continent. Occupation, of course, being far too passive a word for the often bloody reality that followed the arrival of the British. His most recent book, Forgotten Wars, was this week awarded a Victorian Premier's Award, winner in the hotly contested non-fiction field. Henry Reynolds, welcome.
Oh, very nice to be there.
And congratulations, too, on the Victorian Award. Now, your latest book, it points to a great Australian paradox, that we're a country that's increasingly come to define its sense of national self through its experiences in war. You call this the ongoing carnival of military commemoration. And yet our Great War, the century-long frontier battle for this country itself, that remains a hidden thing.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, it's not hidden in that, you know, in the way that it was for many years up to at least the 1960s and 70s, when it really had disappeared from the history books. Now, it's certainly come back into the general historical awareness, but we don't still quite know what to do about it. In particular, it raises that very big question that if indeed, as I argue, that this was war and an important war, then how do we deal with it in relation to this overall national sense that war was the defining national experience? A thing that we are going to spend more and more money and more time commemorating and celebrating, and also remembering with sadness and regret. And so all of these things, it seems to me, are coming together in a situation where we've really got to decide what we're going to do about the war in Australia.
We have a moment, don't we? I mean, 2014, so that's the centenary of the beginning of the First World War. Next year will, of course, be the centenary of Gallipoli. And this is that paradox again. This is the war which we choose, that invasion, as you put it, the invasion of Turkey. The moment that we choose is the defining national experience. If we were to acknowledge those frontier wars of the 19th century, that would change everything about that discussion around recognition, around reconciliation.
Yes, I think so. I have real problems with seeing Gallipoli as being the central national experience. In fact, having made the nation for all sorts of reasons, which I won't go into for the moment. But if you think about what was the war about, and what was achieved by the conflict, or by the particularly that campaign in Turkey, you've got to come to the conclusion that it was a campaign that achieved nothing for Australia in any practical sense, and it led to the loss of many, many lives, that young men who died unnecessarily. But if you look at the conflict within Australia, now clearly it was a very different sort of conflict. It certainly had, many, many people died, both black and white, but overwhelmingly black. But it's not so much the way it was fought, the weapons that were used, the tactics, the number of people who died, but rather the question of what was this war about. Now, clearly this war was about both the ownership and the control of a whole continent. That is, the ownership of the land and the right to exploit the land, and the sovereignty in the world of who actually was the sovereign power in the Australian continent. Now, these are very, very big themes. You can't get bigger ones. And it's for that reason that I would argue that with the exception of the Pacific War after 1941, this was our most important war. It was much more important than the First World War for us.
Yes, because it made us what we are. I mean, it's an interesting thing. If you look, for example, at the American comparison, they too had a frontier war. They too were trying to subdue an occupying people and take control of that country. But it's something in that culture far more recognised, and from that recognition there are still obvious issues of reconciliation and harmony between the peoples, but from that recognition they can move on to a much more confident sense of national self, which is perhaps a confidence we lack, given our lack of recognition.
Yes, I mean, the Americans had both the War of Independence and, of course, the overwhelming experience of the Civil War. But yet they do continue to see conflict with the Indians as warfare. If you look at the official American accounts of American wars, they list all the conflicts with the Indians, even small little wars that killed half a dozen people. They are still included as wars. The Indian wars are recognized within America as wars. Now, this is partly because they, from the very beginning, recognized that the Indians owned the land and that they had sovereignty over the land. And when the British came in and then the Republic, the view was that the Indians continued to have a form of sovereignty, which they still do. Mm. They were seen as domestic dependent nations. So in a sense, that meant that they realised they were in conflict with sovereign nations. And therefore, they recognised even the smallest conflict as war.
Forgotten Wars is the new book from historian Henry Reynolds, and he's joined you this morning on Sunday Extra. It's more than just semantics, though, isn't it, Henry? It's although that is so important to define those conflicts as war, changes our sense of what took place around Australia through the 19th century.
Yes, it does, and above all, it pays the sort of respect to the Aboriginal people, Aboriginal nations, who almost overwhelmingly at some time came into conflict with, usually with settlers rather than government, who came into conflict with the incoming Europeans. It means that we need to respect their fighting, their conflict, their resistance, their attempt to keep control over their territory. We should recognise this and pay it as much respect as we do to the wars we fought overseas. In fact, I would argue we should pay it more respect. That is, we should see them as patriots fighting for their country, and heroic patriots, because they were frequently fighting against impossible odds.
Which takes us back to some extent, to the attitudes that were expressed during the 19th century, I mean, when that situation was far more acknowledged.
It was. In fact, I begin the book with the most extraordinary letter that was written in 1830 to a paper in Launceston in Tasmania, where the writer posed questions for us that we still haven't satisfactorily dealt with. That is, were these people mere criminals, or were they patriots? And if they were patriots, we've got to treat them as if we capture them, they're prisoners of war. But above all, we should respect their heroic struggle to defend their country. Now, I can't quite see why we can't view it that way. It shouldn't be difficult this far away from the conflict to recognise the Aborigines as patriots fighting for Australia in a way that most Australian soldiers weren't fighting for Australia, at least not in Australia.
I wonder too, in that recognition, I mean, you would, therefore there would be a place in great national institutions like the Australian War Memorial, for example, for recognition of that conflict and for paying it its due. What's the response from organisations like that to ideas of that type?
Well, this has been proposed many times over the last 20 years by the Bill Dean, the High Court Judge and Governor General, by Geoffrey Blainey long ago, and by Ken Inglis and numerous other people. And the War Memorial, and indeed, as far as I understand it, there has been a debate within the War Memorial. I mean, Peter Stanley, who was at the War Memorial for many years, has explained that there was constant resistance to the idea of recognising conflict within Australia as warfare, and that it still appears to be the situation. I mean, Brendan Nelson, the new chairman of the board of the War Memorial, has said, well, it's not going to happen on my watch for the next 5 years. And indeed, apparently, in a recent interview, he simply said it wasn't war, and therefore the War Memorial can't pay any attention to it. If it is going to be dealt with, it is the job of the National Museum.
Yes, it wasn't war. I mean, this is the key point, and this is the thing which I guess fluctuates through our history. As you say, acknowledged in the 19th century, removed through the mid-course of the 20th century and restored somewhat latterly. I mean, people like myself who grew up in schools through the 60s and 70s, I mean, the essence of Australian settlement and occupation was its peaceableness, we were taught. There was an entirely almost amicable exchange of land between black and white.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, for a long time, probably from the late 19th century, well into the second half of the 20th century, we comforted ourselves by believing that indeed Australian settlement was uniquely peaceful. And that's partly because we'd removed the Aborigines from the history books. I mean, almost completely, right up to the 1960s. Now, if you remove the Aborigines, indeed, it is a pretty peaceful place. I mean, there's Eureka Stockade, there are bushrangers, there are a few people killed here and there, but above all, by world standards, it is a remarkably peaceful story, and it's a very nice, benign story. But if you bring the Aborigines back into the story, then it changes it completely. Now, the other thing that happened, of course, was that with the recognition by the High Court in the Mabo judgment of 1992 that the Aborigines had a form of property, they had a form of tenure, which the common law could recognise, it meant that it was impossible any longer to say the war was just about, Aborigines stealing or women fighting over women, that it was more like a wave of crime. Mm. You could no longer say that once the High Court had determined that from the beginning of settlement, the Aborigines were the landowners and the landholders in occupation of the continent. So clearly the war was about that problem, that they owned and occupied the land. Now, constitutional recognition, I presume, also implicitly suggests that they also had sovereignty. They were the sovereign powers. The nations, the small Aboriginal nations, had sovereign power. So we simply have to recognise the blindingly obvious that there was conflict, and as a result of that conflict, both the property and the sovereignty passed from the Indigenous people to the British, the imperial and then the colonial governments and the settlers. And that was one of the largest transfers of property and sovereignty in modern history.
And I think this is what Tony Abbott gets at too, with his sense of the importance of that recognition. I mean, he has suggested in the past, as have others, that there is this hollowness in the sense of the country, from both black and white, this hollowness of the sort of gulf of understanding of the which needs to be filled with a more truthful account of our history, that then would allow us to go forward on a much more firm and reconciled footing.
I think that's right. I had quite a lot to do with the reconciliation movement of the 1990s. Initially, I was sceptical, but I got very involved in many parts of the country, and I thought it was an important movement, particularly locally in many parts of Australia. But it seemed to me that ultimately it was wanting Aboriginal people to become reconciled with what had happened to them. It wasn't whites reconciling with what they had done. And so therefore it left open this question of what do we do about this central theme in our history. And there's no way that you can push it to one side. If you accept that the Aborigines had property, had sovereignty, and they lost it, this can't be anything else but one of the most important parts of our history, and I think it has to be recognised. And if we are, as I say, if I said before, if war is to be all important, then we have to come to terms with this war, we have to recognise it, we have to pay respect to those involved in it, and we have to find ways to commemorate it.
There would be some, Henry Reynolds, that would argue that these sorts of thoughts constitute a black armband view of Australian history.
Well, they probably would, but I mean, Geoffrey Blainey coined the term. He wasn't specifically talking about the Aboriginal question. He was also talking about race and gender. And because he chose the black armband, i.e. the symbol of mourning, it was taken up and seen to be relating just to racial questions. But I don't think it's a particularly useful term. The alternative term, the white blindfold, is another slogan, but I think they're slogans that, you know, are now dated and are no longer useful.
Well, I wonder if with a new maturity of this new century, Henry Reynolds, we may at last be ready for that recognition and that conversation. Thanks for joining us this morning.
A great pleasure.
Henry Reynolds, his new book is Forgotten Wars. It won the Victorian Premier's Award, non-fiction, and this week just passed. It's available through New South.